Hello, welcome to the Incomparables TV podcast. I'm Brian Hamilton.
I'm Joe Rosio.
And I'm Yasmin Evian.
I'm Allison Truge.
And I'm Micah Sargent.
And we are talking about the Netflix original series Stranger Things, one series available on Netflix now, just came out a few weeks ago, and we've all had some time to watch it mold over, and now we're going to talk about it in one big Grand Slam episode. If you have not seen the ending of Stranger Things, please do not listen to this. We're going to spoil the hell out of it, but let's jump right in. We only have one person here who was alive during the events of the show. Joe Steele, what was it like being an 11-month-old?
I have absolutely no memory of that, but
fantastic.
But I'm glad I am here to provide adult supervision to this podcast. You know, it's maybe it's a little extreme to say, you know, oh, turn it off right now, like spoilers ahead, because we didn't really necessarily give anybody like a pitch on why they might want to check this out. Like, oh, hey, maybe listen to this thing we talked about on a podcast. But I guess the podcast itself can be the pitch. But you know, I was skeptical of this, and I really liked it. Especially after you get past the first two episodes, I think the first one is especially rocky. Uh-huh. It doesn't really feel like much is there, but it picks up steam and keeps going, and it has a nice, short, self-contained little bubble that it can that you can consume this within, because it's only 8 episodes, so that makes it pretty easy. It's like an 8-hour movie, sort of.
Yasmin, when you saw this, what drew you to it?
So the typography? No, I didn't. The typography?
No, seriously.
Although beautiful, no, that's not. I think I was mostly seeing everyone on Twitter talking about it, and so I was like, okay, it's on Netflix. We've already binge watched our last, thing that we were watching. Let's go check this out. And I actually think it was actually my brother-in-law who's talking to my husband and I. So my husband and I watched it together, and my brother-in-law was like, "Are you watching Stranger Things?" And I was like, "Oh no, we aren't." But I've been seeing it on Twitter, so he was the one that was like, "You got to go watch it." And I'm really glad I did.
Yeah, heck yeah. So for me, the interesting thing is I had finished watching it because I am ridiculous and saw it pop up and was like, okay, let's do this. But I'd finished watching it before really I saw any sort of, responses. And, I'm friends or acquaintances with some pretty critical people. So I saw a lot of, negative responses to the show. Whether they'd watched one episode or all the episodes or what have you. And as Joe mentioned, kind of in the beginning, it is a little rocky. But I don't know, I'd already watched the whole thing and I fell in love with it almost immediately, to be honest with you, from the moment that the title came on, to me, like, realizing the music. The soundtrack is incredible. And typically, I don't quite pick that out until after I finish watching something. But I was watching it and going, oh my gosh, this soundtrack is so good. And the last time I did that was with The Social Network. So I like a lot of the parts of this show. And I mostly disagree with a lot of the original critical stuff. And I think what's interesting too is that after a while, after people kind of gave it the time that it needed and watched more episodes, I saw a lot more people start to fall in line with actually enjoying it.
I agree. A lot of the criticism I've seen of the show has been the fact, well, it takes place in the 80s, and here we are in 2016 we're watching this on an extremely modern way where we have 8 episodes all at once. We binge it mostly on our iPads or Surface Books or whatever. And the fact that this was done in the 80s has gotten a lot of flack for people, because people who were alive in the 80s have said this is just slightly off and it's a little too kitschy at times. I disagree. I really loved all the 80s little elements that they threw into it, but I honestly don't think it got in the way of the story like a lot of other people did.
I mean, it's no worse than like Mad Men, in terms of like being produced in such a way that it evokes the era by curating things that you are more likely to remember. And, it's not like there's a poster about a unloved John Carpenter movie in the basement. You know, it's all very specifically about things that these directors like, and the directors aren't even that old either, because they mostly experienced the 80s as I did, in terms of watching, you know, VHS tapes in the 90s, or seeing it on cable TV, you know, except, well, He-Man I watched on TV, but that's a totally different thing.
Yeah, I actually, as a person who also experienced the 80s mostly through, like, you know, VHS tapes and stuff like that, I feel like whenever there is kind of like a moment that might be a little bit kitschy and it kind of maybe goes over the line a little bit, I actually kind of like that it's sort of a nod for me towards like kitschy, like John Hughes movies almost, like especially in the kind of archetypes of the characters. I don't know. I think I really like those elements thrown in. For instance, like whenever there's kind of like that techie, like when they're looking at the microfilm and there's like the music in the background that's like the super like techie, we're looking at a computer in the 80s kind of music. I actually really enjoy it because it made me think to myself, like, oh, right, for me, a person who didn't grow up in the 80s, like, I can still look at this and be like, oh, right, this was actually pretty cutting-edge technology. Or not cutting-edge, but, like, it was the technology available.
I feel like Micah, The Social Network was the last movie I saw where the soundtrack really meant something to me while I was watching it, because so many other movie soundtracks, this isn't a bad thing, but they just blend in with everything else because that's what they're supposed to do. You're not supposed to be watching a music video. You're supposed to be, you know, watching a movie. And I feel like this show does a really great job because so many other elements jut out like that right at you. The typography is gorgeous. All of the, like the floating Millennium Falcon where you have the silly 80s element there. It didn't bother me as much as a lot of other people, but the music also stood out to me as this is 80s. And when I watched Terminator for the first time as a kid, I remember the music in like the goth club being so egregiously 80s, but that was written and made in the 80s. And this kind of music, looking back now 30 years ago, it makes a lot more sense to have it in something like this.
Something that surprised me that I didn't find stepped over that line was with the, like, the, they kept going back to the song, like, you know, should I stay or should I go? And the first time that appeared, I was kind of like, oh, this is going to happen a lot, isn't it? Like, oh, so heavy-handed. I was
we
like,
paid for this song. We're going to get all of our use out of it.
I was, like, back in my college writing workshop thinking of, like, writing on the paper, like, heavy-handed. But, like, by the end of it, I was like, no, I actually really enjoy that detail. It kind of fulfills, like, a part of me that really wanted something like that to be there, and it didn't bother me that it was maybe, like, not the most subtle.
Yeah, that I think that's the thing. So there's media that you can tell is influenced by something, and that's because it has, you know, small bits of whether it's like, you know, thematic or animation style or, you know, cinematography or what have you, it's influenced by something. And then there's something that I think is an homage. And I think that's what this is. This to me was, it's overly obvious for the point of saying, like, this is what we're doing. We promise you, like, we're not just trying to make a movie today that is inspired by what happened in the 80s. It's we're trying to make an 80s movie and, you know, a sci-fi film. As if, like, you could pick up this film and in the 80s and watch it then, and it would belong right with everything else, as opposed to, like, I don't know, some other film today that just takes cues from something back then. If somebody watched it back then, they'd be like, they're time travelers. This doesn't belong in our era. This this feels like it actually belongs. And I like, there are times when even the creature, which I'm sure we'll talk more about, they show it and it almost has this stop motion-y vibe to it. It's super like grainy and its movements are a little rocky. And I remember having this conversation, I think, in a Slack channel of some sort about how I really think that, you know, because Netflix does really, really well with original content and the studios that it hires, I'm sure the resources are there for them to have spent a bajillion dollars on really awesome Joe Steele quality graphics, but they didn't do that. Like, it's almost purposefully kind of, again, kitschy and a little low grade for the purpose of saying, like, this is exactly what we're doing. Like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I promise, like, this is what we had planned. So, I don't know. I liked it because of that. And that kind of added an extra element as I'm watching it, where it's one of those I see what you did there kind of moments as as it goes along.
And I think that's why I was so intrigued by it when I did start watching it, because I'm not a type of person that likes horror movies. And this is, I wouldn't necessarily put this under, like, the horror movies type of genre, but because it wasn't so much like, hey, this is a movie and it was made in 2016 and there's all these special effects that you can really tell, like, that's actually, I think, why I did enjoy it so much, because it felt, something about it just, like, felt, I don't know, comfortable. I don't know if I can explain it.
I agree with that. So actually, my introduction to Stranger Things was because, well, when you're dating Brian Hamilton and you're like, I want to watch a scary movie, he's like, oh, it's time to watch Saw. And I'm like, no, I really don't want to. And so I was in a mood and I was like, okay, I kind of am in the mood to watch something creepy, but I need to suggest something or else I'm going to be way in over my head. So I was like, all right, let's give Stranger Things a try. And I was not disappointed at all. I agree with that kind of aesthetic. It's scary, but there's something else to it.
I want to go back to what you said, Yasmin, because of how, true, yes, I am into horror movies, but I honestly didn't think Stranger Things was all that scary, and I don't know if that makes me weird. Did you guys, were you scared by it? Do you think they intentionally threw in scares to unsettle you, or is this just a creepy sci-fi story that revolves around this terrible tragedy, but is also, as a consequence, scary? Like, I don't think they set out to put in jump scares to freak people out.
No, I think it definitely wasn't supposed to be a movie or a series. See, I almost said a movie there. That was supposed to, like, scare you in the essence of, like, oh, you know, like, don't turn that corner or something's going to pop up and scare you. And, like, there was elements of that, but it was more for it emphasized more on, like, the sci-fi aspect of it and not so much the, like, horror, like, I want to terrify you type thing, which is where I think the difference is. Like, I can watch Walking Dead. Some people think that's scary, but I don't think that's scary because for me, it's more of, like, a drama, you know? So I think that's kind of where the difference is for me, whereas in, like, a horror movie is maybe, in essence, more focused on maybe the killing or some other thing of, like, that's actually going to be causing more damage and more gore and emphasizing that instead of, like, the plot.
Well, the only thing I would say is that I think that there are spooky horror jump scare moments in this. It is mostly tension. And I think part of that comes from the influence that the Duffer brothers have had, the two brothers who might be identical twins, they're not sure, who made this is... Well, they had... they have a reference to Poltergeist in here, in the first episode where the mom has tickets and decided that he can go see it. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen Poltergeist, but it's not scary in the way that something like Saw is scary, which I would probably describe more as, like, gore porn. But it's not scary like The Ring or anything like that. It is a different kind of tension and a different kind of thrill to that, that you experience when you're watching it. And it is definitely a slower pace, with fewer jump scares. But there's still scares. Like, in the very first episode, in the first few scenes, you get that vibe. I don't know when we might want to branch off into discussing that, but I do feel like there are some horror elements that are definitely in here. And I know that they've definitely made references to it. Like, The Thing is referenced at a couple points in here, both in a poster and actually they're watching a clip of it. It's definitely the 80s style of what was scary influenced them when they were making it.
For me, the main analog throughout all the horror elements of this is something along the lines of Goonies or Super 8, which wasn't 80s, but very, very much inspired by the Steven Spielberg movies of the 80s, produced by Steven Spielberg, because of the kids. And I do want to talk to you guys about the characters, because like Yasmin said, The Walking Dead, while being a horror show about zombies and the apocalypse and all of that, is at its heart a drama. And I feel like Stranger Things is very similar, where you have, I'd say, more horror elements than The Walking Dead, even though they're completely different shows. But at the heart of it, you have these amazing child actors. You have Winona Ryder in an incredible performance I did not expect whatsoever when I saw she was cast in this. And I wanted to ask you guys, what did you think of the child actors? Because they can be very hit or miss.
I didn't think they were hit or miss in the slightest. Mm-mm. They were all, like, each of their performance were particularly excellent, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm nodding my head and saying yes to everything you were just saying, because I absolutely agree. I think, yeah, there were, you know, I saw some critiques there as well. I think if there's, in terms of performances, personally, I think that the critiques belong more, or, you know, are deserved for the adults, other than Winona, of course. But the adults were, for the most part, kind of lackluster. But I think all of the kids did really, really good jobs. Of course, you know, we didn't see Will that much. And I started to think tonight, I wonder if he was like the worst actor of all the kids they chose.
He might have been, though.
Let's have him be the one that gets, you know, gets kidnapped for most of the thing.
You're
still important, but you it's just because you kind of look like Winona Ryder, so no, that's being mean. I really think that the kids did a great job.
Good thing you're going to be in the show.
Yeah, you get to be in the show. You're just not going to be in the show. We're going to be looking for you the whole time.
Can we talk about how awesome Eleven was, or is?
Eleven, oh god, Eleven's performance is like jaw-droppingly amazing. It wasn't even like, oh, she's a child actress and she did such a good job. It was like she was so believable, and so like everything was so great. I think maybe some of the writing of her character in the first couple of episodes was a little lacking, but even through that, she super plowed through it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there were times whenever the content, I mean, she had to spend a good portion of time just not saying anything anyway. But as she grows as a character and we start to learn about, you know, all of the things that she's experienced, and you just, or at least for me, I just really started to, you know, grow super, super attached and feel so much for that character. And I really, really liked Eleven. And frankly, I liked even more than just like the individual performances of the kids. I loved the group dynamic. I think that that was wonderful.
They were an excellent ensemble.
You could tell they were friends on set as well. The way they interacted felt extremely genuine. Mm-hmm. And you need that from a child actor. I agree that Eleven's writing, Truge, was a little weak in the first few episodes, simply because she seemed a little inconsistent to me. Not knowing what food was at one point, or not even food, but like not knowing what friend was, or not knowing what promise was, things like that. And as great of a character as she was later on in the show, I feel like there's a big disconnect between where she started and where she ended up because of the stuff that they purport her to not know anything about, like friendship or promises or things like that. The way she acted around the diner owner, particularly, it was a great way to get you hooked in the first episode on this wonderful, weird character we don't particularly know yet. But I feel like as the series went on and she became more developed, there was some sort of disconnect between where she started and where she ended up, as much as I love both places.
I also really think this is like a total can of worms, but I think, especially with Eleven, but with all of the kids, I think writing-wise, there was an opportunity that I think was a little missed. So I've been thinking about this a lot since I finished watching it, like, 48 hours ago. But I've been thinking a lot about the way that Eleven, the way that she, like, is made to perform her gender really interesting, but also kind of a missed opportunity. There's a moment in, like, I think in either the first or second episode, I think it might be the second episode, when she's looking at the picture of Nancy on the mantle at her long hair, and she kind of goes, like, pretty. And then they kind of do this thing where once you, like, really get attached to her character, they kind of, like, put her in a wig. And, like, every time she's, like, not wearing the wig, like, somebody, not one of the ensemble of, like, boys, but it's kind of like a statement on othering, where her mm-hmm. hair is really short, and it's, and people are like, oh, well, she looks like a boy. And I think it's kind of a missed opportunity that even branches off into, like, all of the really weird, like, othering of queer people, and the way in which, like, they would say things about Will and, like, how he disappeared and, like, how he possibly disappeared. And no one ever says, like, it's always kind of this, it's like this understanding of, like, oh, well, it's fine if he's gay. But no one actually says that. It's kind of like this, like, understood thing. And I don't really accept that. And I understand that this is the 80s and it was a different time and all that kind of stuff. But this is still 2016. And I think it probably could have been handled in a different way. I think it was maybe a missed opportunity that I would have liked to see explored a little bit more.
Yes. I feel like I continue to respond to everything that you say with yeses and I agrees. But I mean, frankly, that is the case. I also felt a little, I don't know if uncomfortable was the word, is the word, or unsatisfied, I guess might be it, with both of those characters, and also with the older brother too, where, you know, they were kind of saying the same things, but, you know, beating around the bush and not quite just nailing it down and saying what needs to be said. And that's, I don't know. Yeah, I agree. there was a missed opportunity there. I think,
yeah,
could have gone somewhere, with, especially again with 11. And, you know, in the end, we did see that, and now I'm forgetting the little boy's name. You know, Mike kind of responded, you can have short hair, you can have long hair, and I still think you're pretty. But when everybody else is kind of on the outside, you know, saying the things that they're saying, it's disappointing. It is.
We've had similar discussions like this on Game of Thrones, where yes, it was a different time. It's like medieval times where things are horrible. They treat women, people of color, terribly in Game of Thrones. It's 2016. That still doesn't excuse them from treating people better. And they've definitely improved on that in season 6. What I would love to say about Stranger Things is that yes, it was the 80s and that's how things were, but you are absolutely right. This is 2016. We can definitely do better. But I do want to say they did a very good job of capturing what the 80s were like. I do not endorse anything that was said in the show, because they said some pretty horrible things. A lot of the bullies in the show were absolutely terrible, mm-hmm. too. Like, they cranked the bulliness of the show up to 11 in ways,
yeah,
that I don't think I've ever seen, even though that motif and that the gist of that is in a lot of 80s movies and a lot of high school movies especially. They really did amp up the homophobic language and terrible. The kid pulled a switchblade. They're, what, 9 years old? What?
Yeah, no, it's like all of the bullies on the show are, like, basically sociopaths. I think there's something to be said for the fact that, like, a really big part of this show is kind of, like, the feeling of otherness. And, like, that I like to say this show is kind of, like, a mashup of, like, Super 8 and, like, The Goonies and, what's the other one? Freaks and Geeks. Super-duper Freaks and Geeks vibes. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that, like, it's art, and it's not saying that, like, the makers of it were trying to be harmful or anything like that. And they were, you could even maybe say they were trying to prove a point. I just think that it's not that it made me uncomfortable. It's exactly what Micah said. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I kind of maybe just felt a little disappointed or, like, unsatisfied.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
That's the worst thing you can tell a child.
Yeah.
One of the things that's always interesting to me is, like, when I watch movies from the 80s or even the 90s that I grew up watching, and then I, you know, watch it as an adult, and I'm like, my parents let me watch this? Like, I thought this was, like, a family movie or something, you know? Because if you look at, like, some of the stuff that is said, especially for even towards, like, women, you know, like, making fun of them, and it's supposed to be in this, like, joking way, which is, of course, doesn't make it right, and you're just like, oh, no wonder we have so many problems. It's like people were joking about it in these movies that we grew up thinking, oh, that's like a family fun movie. Mm-hmm. And then you see it and you're like, oh, that's pretty terrible. And I'm sitting here watching it with my daughter and, you know, thinking like, how do I explain that this isn't okay, but still let her enjoy the movie because I enjoyed it as a kid, you know? And it's also, I mean, if it's absolutely terrible, then I won't. But it's like trying to think of how to justify and juggle the two.
I just rewatched Back to the Future again for the first time in a few years. And Jesus Christ, the ending of that movie is problematic as hell. Going off of that, I wanted to talk to you guys about the high school characters as opposed to the childhood characters, the arcs of Nancy, Steve, Jonathan, and Barb, fan favorite Barb, only lasted two episodes. My favorite character in the show.
She was the best character on the show. Barb forever. Barb for president.
Barb for president.
Barb for president. There you got your show title.
Oh dear. I'm with Barb.
I especially appreciated, like, I'm a huge, like, collar outer of fat phobia in all media because, like, I'm just about it. And, like, seeing a person who is, like, not a waifishly fit, like, waifishly thin Molly Ringwald kind of character, like Nancy, who, like, kind of acts as a foil in a lot of different ways, like, seeing a character like that made me so happy. And then they use her to, like, further the waifish girl's goal. And I'm like, God, it's do better. Just do better.
Yeah. And that moment when we find out that, you know, that she that Eleven can't connect with Barb, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, Barb, you were supposed to live. And I really did enjoy Barb's character, too, because she was totally like that friend that was just like, no, like, you're being stupid. Like, no, you know? And so, I was really, really bummed that they didn't use it.
You know, sometimes it can be one of those things where the person is kind of speaking out of jealousy or is, you know, upset that they're not getting the same experiences or what have you. And this was definitely not that. You know, I want to say that about Barb. Like, this was all about protecting her friend and saying, like, you know, it wasn't, you get to go do that and I have to go home. No, she was there to keep her friend safe and say, like, this is really not you as a person. It was never one of these, people on different levels type things, if that makes sense. I think that Barb saw herself as an equal to Nancy and was just saying, like, I care about you very much and I don't want you to go do these things. And I think that you're being idiotic and, this is not who you are. And I do want to note after I've been reading some of the stuff that the creators have been saying, and actually the main purpose of the character of Barb in this show was to make, according to the creators, was to make you as a viewer feel incredibly unsafe. They took two characters, which was the guy from the restaurant and Barb, who were, you know, we thought, or at least I did in the beginning, and that was the point, was to make you feel like the guy in the restaurant, you know, is going to be good long-time friends with Eleven, or, you know, be a guardian to Eleven and make sure everything goes well, and then suddenly he's dead on the floor by this person that you thought was the person who was supposed to come take care of Eleven. And then again with Barb, where, yes, we didn't know until the very end for sure, but, you know, Barb was taken, and we saw that part, and we saw, you know, her climbing up the pool ladder and then disappearing. And so the point of her disappearing and, you know, being taken by the monster was, oh my gosh, this is very Game of Thrones-esque in the sense that no one is sacred and everyone mm-hmm. is at risk of being taken away. And I think that's where the fear comes in. You know, that's the scary part. The other scary part is Steve. And I just want to know if Joe has any thoughts on Steve.
Steve is the worst.
In true incomparable fashion, I would love to have a mini draft of the worst things that Steve has done. Joe, what is your least favorite thing Steve did in the show?
My least favorite thing is when he shows up and tries to act like he cares about Nancy and how she's yep. been hurt and is just totally ruining everything. And I'm just like, leave, Steve. Just go out, go back out the door. Just leave forever. goodbye, Steve.
No one wants.
And then
to
I was actually kind of, I was kind of disappointed when he gets in his car, and you know, I'm assuming that the spoiler horn will have gone off by now since we've been talking about things. But you know, he gets in that car and he sees the lights flashing, and he's like, "Oh no, that monster!" I was just like, please just leave, or please just have that be a fake out and the monster's really behind him. And goodbye, Steve. Goodbye forever. But no, he saves the day. And then I just got even angrier.
He redeemed himself towards the end.
I just didn't like it because it like felt so hollow. It was like such a weird pivot. Like yeah. he got beat up one time, and then he's just like, I'm going to take off all of the graffiti and I feel so bad.
It was a really quick turnaround.
it was a quick turnaround, but I think like even in the beginning when you see him with his friends and he's you know with what was her name, Nancy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm terrible with names. As you see him and they kind of are teasing him about it, like, oh wow, you actually care about her. And so it was a quick turnaround, but at the same token, like for me, it was kind of like, hey, there is kind of this redemption of this guy's a total jerk face. And then in the end, he actually comes through and then like really does apologize to them and is just like, hey, like, I'm sorry. I was a total jerk. Let me make this right. But that's where I kind of was like, all right, like he at least redeemed himself. I guess if he didn't redeem himself, then I would have been pissed off.
He had a little bit of an interesting plot because I feel like, well, the ending, he's still with Nancy and has at least a little bit of respect for Jonathan and bought him a new camera and everything. I thought that was an interesting, if not missed opportunity, plot. But I feel like if it had gone any other way, it would have been a little stereotypical in my mind. Like, if Nancy had ended up with Jonathan, we would have seen it coming a mile away. And I'm glad they at least did something a little different. I do want to say to the show's credit that Nancy's plot that involved, you know, sacrificing Barb, quote unquote, for the sake of her character advancement and her really revering the complete jerk that is Steve. That plot maybe lasts for two episodes, maybe two and a half. And I really like that. To the show's credit, Nancy grew up beyond the very one-dimensional problematic character she was in the first few episodes. And Steve was a consequence of that. And I'm really glad that he had an interesting plot and that Nancy was at least able to get away from him in a more meaningful way than, I'm breaking up with you.
I did not like how stark his turnaround was. It was kind of like, oh my god, wait, the patriarchy is that easy to crush? Well, hold on, let's do this to everyone. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't believe it. Maybe that's it. I just didn't believe it. And it's not that I wanted her to end up with Jonathan, although, like, in my shipping heart, of course. But, like, but...
In my shipping heart, it was Nancy and Barb, but that's...
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, I don't think Nancy deserves Barb.
That's
Barb
true.
Barb deserves so much better.
Barb does
Barb for president in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I feel. But no, I didn't believe that they ended up together in the end, like Steve and Nancy. I was I feel like too much had happened for Nancy to turn around and be like, okay, I believe you. I don't know.
I kind of wish it had been neither of them
rather
than either of them. Like, I acknowledge what you guys have said. Like, I would have been disappointed if it had been with Jonathan. Because it felt like there was still weirdness in their relationship, although there was a friendship that they developed through this process that brought them closer together than probably most friends. But now they're estranged again because of the romantic rejection. And then... going with Steve, it's just like, oh god, did you see his Christmas sweater? Like, why would you pick him? Like, you could do, like,
I know you were jealous of his sweater.
it all stems from my Steve jealousy.
I'm jealous of the hair. I gotta admit, no, that's what I liked least.
I will say this though. I think, you know, to Jonathan and Nancy's, you know, friendship that developed, and I guess one thing, we were all kind of expecting them to fall in love, right? But then it also kind of plays on, like, hey, if they're going to be friends, then they automatically have to fall in love. Like, why can't they just be friends? Mm-hmm. Why can't people be opposite sex just be friends? And so, yeah, I was kind of like, she loves Steve from the beginning, and if we're thinking about it from like her perspective, like, yeah, this guy was a jerk, but I don't know.
She was hoping for the best. I obviously, you know, expected, I don't know, the best of him. And so if she's convinced that he really did turn his life around and, you know, straightened up and is flying right at this point, then she's ready to you know, hop back into it, I guess. I ultimately, we don't know the motivations there, but I can imagine, yeah, you know, when you start to feel feelings for someone, then it's a little bit easier to ignore the flaws and say, okay, I can believe that you really did want to change. And I think that I see Steve as being a character, or I see Steve as being a person who will continually try to show that, you know, he's reformed. And I think that, you know, that was a big step with the camera. And I want to imagine in my headcanon that he's constantly like, now let me show you how else I've, you know, made a difference in my life. And I was actually just influenced by some terrible, terrible people who were socially pressuring me into being a dick. I probably can't say that, can I?
You can. I won't cut that.
To show you my love, I've bought you a matching Christmas sweater.
That's what real
Joe,
love
is. Joe, yours
is
in the mail.
Thank you. There was also, I don't know if any of you guys got this vibe too, but around the same time that Steve was behaving so strangely and his parents happened to be out of town, quote unquote, for like the rest of the series, there was this moment where I thought, like, I wonder if, you know, Dr. Brenner, if that's actually his dad, and he's just said, like, he had to go out of town, and, like, there's gonna be, like, some deeper connection. It's like, no, he's just a rich kid. Never mind. So that was kind of, like, a moment, like, halfway through the series where I thought that. Because it was right around the time where they were investigating Dr. Brenner with the microfiche and stuff, with that montage in the library. But it didn't pan out.
Darn, that would have been... Oh, man, that would have been interesting.
I was thinking... You know, when we had the officer, or I forget, gosh, drawing a blank on his name, but like when he had lost his daughter, and I was like, oh my gosh, what about if she was taken? So I was thinking they were going to play on something like that, but then, you know, we later found out, no, she actually did pass away. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was, there was a lot of things that I was like, what if, you know, I'm like trying to think through the plot here. I'm like, oh, are they going to draw it back to this?
Yeah, there were lots of, you know, different paths it could have taken that it didn't end up taking. And speaking of that, today I was checking out some concept art for not only the Upside Down itself, because it was originally supposed to be in New York before they moved it, and not only that, but the monster itself. And I would love to know what everyone thought of the monster. You know, what was it, scary? Was it silly? What did you think of old Monster Pal?
I thought we would never see it a la Blair Witch, but lo and behold, we actually did get full monster vision. We saw it, what, four episodes in? And I liked it. I mean... The way I feel about the monster, and honestly the entire plot of the show, which we'll talk about later, I want to talk more about the sci-fi aspects of it, but everyone is seeing a different part of it and understanding a different part of it. It's like the blind men with the elephant. They're all feeling a different part of it, and they're making judgments about it based on what's going on. And we as the viewer are the only people that get to see everything as objectively as possible. So the monster is one of those ways where it's a little normalized because we know everyone's seeing the same monster. I thought it looked cool. I enjoyed its concept art, or the art direction about it and the animation, but we don't really have any visual effects experts here, so I can't really say much about how it was animated or put together or anything like that. Let's Joe, what do you think?
I didn't love the design of the monster, because it kind of, when it was at its most threatening, it was sort of like a flower, because it had like those five petals that would peel back on its face with the little teeth, and it'd be like, okay, so you're just kind of like a threatening starfish or something. Like I wish that was like a little different.
This is Starmie's third evolution.
Okay.
How did you know that threatening starfish is my online dating profile name?
it was something where I didn't love it. I'm not like strongly opposed to it, but it, you know, it's not going to send chills down my spine. I actually preferred it more when we saw it in silhouette as we did earlier on, and the time when she sees it for the first time in sort of her like mental pool, for lack of a better term, and it's like feasting on something, and we can't see what it is, and we can't see the front of the creature. I thought that it was more interesting then. The whole part of like seeing it roar and like open up its mouth and like get really close to biting one of the main characters, but not bite one of the main characters because they can't really die yet because that's not part of the story. that stuff kind of, you know, it's a little cliche. And it wasn't entirely an animated creature. Like they had like appliance stuff that they did, but the head was entirely animated. So that probably helped them out a bit, but I think everybody still thinks the whole monster was CG all the time and in all of the contexts. So maybe that didn't help them out. I don't know. Yeah.
Yasmin, what do you think of it?
You know, it's funny, when I was watching the show, I wasn't necessarily like scared of it. I was more intrigued, like, oh, what does it look like? But one night after we had finished watching the show, it had been a couple days, and I was working on the computer, and it was like late at night. My husband was going to bed, and I had my back up against the window, and he makes a comment where he's like, to let the Demogorgon get you. And I'm like, oh, and so I had to move away from the window and go sit on the couch so I wasn't facing the window. So I guess I did get scared. I didn't think I was. But once I thought about it, I was like, okay, this is scary, you know. And then the lights were twinkling, and I was like, what is happening? Yeah.
That's what you get for installing Hue lights.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like,
oh. Someone needs to make a Hue lights preset for Stranger Things where everything flashes.
Actually, that would be pretty awesome.
That'd be really expensive, though, to like do the whole alphabet.
Oh my gosh.
But one thing though about it is like I felt the tension of it, like Yasmin saying, like the you know, especially because at first we don't understand how it travels, that it can sort of appear anywhere. You can't tell if it's just moving very fast or if it's like phasing through walls or something, but you know, we kind of come to put together that it can essentially step back out of real space and into the upside down, and then step back into, you know, our reality again. And that's how it can sort of hunt us here on, you know, where we are. So that's
the right side up.
Yeah, the right side up. It's one of the things that makes it a little different from some of the other stuff, but its very first introduction is kind of cliche, you know, scientist running down a hallway, lights flickering, mm-hmm. gets into the elevator, pushing the buttons. Oh no, where is it? Oh, it's above me. And then you see the guy get pulled up by people with wires on the stage back there. No, it's one of those things where it's just like that's been done. So it's a little cliche, but it's done to better effect later on in the series where we see people just, you know, disappearing out of places, especially when mm-hmm. the lights start flickering right before they go. So that's, you know, it's a interesting idea. It's a riff on several other ideas. So it's cool.
It's almost as if nothing's original.
Nothing is original, and everything in sun on under the sun. I found that it was what Yasmin is saying. I was too busy wondering what the heck this thing was, what it looked like, where it came from, how come it was here. There were so many questions that I had about this creature. Like, it was so satisfying learning more and more and more about how it came to our world and, you know, what Eleven's purpose was in all of this. Because at first I was like, is Eleven like the offspring of this creature, and the only way that it can, like, it ends up taking on the form of whatever, you know, species it's invading or whatever. So I had no idea what was going on, obviously. And I was just so focused on that, trying to figure out the quote unquote science of the situation, that I didn't really have a chance to get freaked out by the monster. ever, really. I was more freaked out, like, oh gosh, who's going to die or get taken away next? And I think the most unsettling part was when anyone ended up in the Upside Down, and especially like when Nancy was in the Upside Down all alone. That was pretty terrifying. But yeah, I still want to know more. And allegedly, if we get a second season, there will be more to learn about the monster, why there's only one monster in this second dimension, you know, what the second dimension is. Apparently, they have 30 pages of details on the Upside Down and the monster that lives there. So they only revealed like 2 or 3 pages in the entirety of the 8 episodes. And so there's lots more to learn about the science of the Upside Down. And that's what I can't wait for.
I want to know why the air is toxic with all like the floating stuff.
Yeah, the little floaties, the little shine a light and you see dust, but this dust is poisonous.
But it's so pretty.
But it's so pretty. It's majestic. It's like the anglerfish with their little light up. I'm too busy staring at the little dust particles, and then the monster comes and gets me.
Pollute my lungs any day.
You can pollute my lungs any day.
The one weird thing, because there are a lot of unanswered questions about the Upside Down, but I had a couple that kind of kept sticking out of my mind when I'm watching it and I'm seeing the events of this series in particular unfold, is some of it relies on the fact that places and things are duplicated in the Upside Down but covered in gunk. For lack of a better term. That includes even like these temporary structures like Castle Byers, quote unquote, his little fort behind the house, the shed, the house itself, the public library, you know, all the little areas of town. But then there's also weird stuff like cars are there, some of the streetlights have light that comes on in them, and it's like, well, what's powering those? Because none of the other lights are on. And like, what, why, like, if someone moves their car from Main Street, that other ghost duplicate car doesn't stay there. Does that car go just driving down the street? That would be weird.
I had the exact same question. I think that my initial theory was kind of that, like, the Upside Down is kind of like a futuristic, like, dystopia, because, like, where is that in media? I don't know. I've never seen it. But yeah, that really doesn't hold up with the way, with like the logic of the world right now. So yeah, I'm also really curious about that. I want to know why it's all gunked up, why it's all sticky. This is how we get ants.
When midway through watching the show, I saw a tweet where somebody said, uh-oh, I think Stranger Things is going to come to a really unsatisfying conclusion that explains everything. And I feel like the conclusion to the show winds up having the best of both worlds, where it's a satisfying story. We find Will, all the, you know, plot points are tied up, but we still have all these questions and we're wondering what's going on with the Upside Down and how all of this works. This leaves enough for season two. Like, there's no big cliffhanger like the end of like a Hunger Games movie or something. We are set. We are satisfied for now. But there's still so many questions about what actually happened, and I hope season two is more of a retrospective or maybe another story in this realm, but we can, you know, learn things as we go about what happened in season one. I had finished the series and then started watching again with Allison and a whole bunch of people up together in Boston, and I had known everything. All of the theories that everyone was talking about during the first few episodes were, you know, very weird and really great, and I really missed being in that world of theorizing what was going on. But the way that the show is structured really teases the right things at the right time. I didn't realize that when Barb was taken, she was in the pool. I thought she was just in some weird other dimension, but I didn't realize it was the pool where she literally was a second before in the other dimension. So those kinds of things that wound up making a lot more sense on a second viewing were so much more satisfying. And I feel like this is going to be a show where you can go back and see, oh, wait, the light flickered then. That means that this person was there, or was it the monster? I don't, like, things like that are what make this show as special to me as it is, because of all the extra stuff that they threw in there.
Are we ready to talk about, like, the ending? The two things that kind of left us wondering, wait a minute, what is this?
I would love to, yes. If everyone's ready and willing, we have waffles to talk about.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Lego my ego.
There are two big things that happen at the end. So, you know, everybody's back, and we're jolly and happy, and we're all sitting... Will and his family are sitting down to dinner, and, you know, they're talking and carrying on, and... well, I guess they were about to sit down for dinner. Will decides that he needs to go to the restroom. He just has to wash his hands. But he goes into the restroom and he's, you know, washing his hands and, you know, splashing water on his face. And then he starts coughing. And what should happen? But he coughs up some sort of sluggy, gross, maggoty type creature that clearly has come from a different realm. And then he looks up and the room flashes and he's back in the upside down for a split second. And then it comes back to the real world. And then he goes back and sits with his family. And this is the part that didn't make sense to me about this situation. He's like a little kid. And when little kids are, you know, in trouble or they're worried about something, typically they're like, hey, Ma, I'm hungry, or hey, I need my diaper changed, or in this case, because he's older, like, hey, this meanie said something mean to me and I'm upset about it. So, like, he's been to a different dimension and now he's seeing some really scary stuff and he coughed up a doggone lung maggot. And why is he not saying anything to anyone? I didn't understand that. Like, I don't think he's old enough to be like, I don't want to worry my parents or something like that. He seems to be under that age. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I have two theories on this. Either one, whatever is happening, he can't perceive or remember that it has occurred as a side effect, or number two, he's in a deep state of denial and thinks that these are all just bad dreams and that he just needs to get through it because everyone keeps telling him that he's safe and that he's fine and that nothing bad is happening. And either and since we've flashed forward a month, maybe they were telling him, you know, oh, you're fine, you're totally here, you didn't go anywhere. You know, who knows?
Oh, that's true. It could have been going on that whole time, and the every time he brought it up before, they were like, no, you're fine, you're just having bad dreams. I guess I didn't think about that.
Yeah, those are the only two that I'm thinking are plausible. Either he's in denial, or he can't perceive and remember that this has occurred. Because, like, there's a weird sort of reset when he, like, has to think for a second when he gets back to the table. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I would say the latter. Yeah, that would be my theory as well.
I have a third theory about what happened to Will. He was the only person who was in the outside, in the upside down for as long as he was without any sort of respiratory protection. Everyone else was wearing masks. And at one point, Winona Ryder goes, why do I have to wear a mask? My son is in there. He's not wearing a mask. And I have a feeling that he was somehow infected by all of the toxicity or whatever anglerfish dust was in the upside down. And now he may or may not have similar powers as the monster, if that makes sense. Like, if he's able to flip back and forth between the upside down as quickly as he did in the bathroom right there, maybe he can do the same kind of interdimensional travel as the monster.
Ooh, or did the monster... Maybe the monster wasn't like born or existed in the upside down, but found its way to the upside down and became the monster.
It's very possible that the monster was a human. Yeah. I mean, it was human-ish. It had hands and feet and a body, but it had a flower for a head. Who knows where that came from? But my theory is that...
If you spend enough time in the upside down, you become a
flower. Yeah, exactly.
You become a flower. Ultimately, you take root and you become a flower. And you end up in a game called Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers, and you come out of a green pipe, and that's your destiny.
I mean, like, yeah, we still have so many unanswered questions of, like, the upside down, right? It's like an upside down world, but has it always been there? What, you know, when they were making connections to it, when we flash back to like 11, when she's first making the connection to the monster, and it's, you know, like what I don't, we, yeah, there's still so many unanswered questions. Like, has it always existed, or is this another dimension that they had entered before? Or was it the first time? It's so many things left unsaid, especially with the ending of the last thing. It's kind of like you think, oh, everything's all nice and tidy, and now they're going to have dinner and live happily ever after. And then there's that quick change in the atmosphere.
I also want to know how big it is. I want to know if this is like a Gravity Falls scenario where like this, it's just this one town that's like weird stuff happens there and there happens to be another dimension that's like just that town, or if it's like a worldwide thing and you could just kind of stay in the Upside Down and it kind of spans the entire world.
The Worldwide Upside Down, brought to you by AOL.
No.
The other bizarre thing that happened at the end of the series that is leaving us with dangling low-hanging fruit questions for season two is the sheriff being so complacent at the end, getting into the car with the government officials, being very, okay, fine, whatever, I'll get in the car with you. I was expecting a scene with a interrogation or some kind of debrief, because the talk that led to them being able to go into the Upside Down and be able to be free earlier on in that last episode really confused me. It didn't make much sense to me, but here we are. Maybe there's something deeper about him and his relationship with the government officials. And we also see him dropping off into a nice little pine box in the woods some food, and we're wondering, huh, I wonder who this is. Oh, we know who it is. They dropped off waffles. Who loves waffles? Everyone loves waffles. Who particularly loves waffles? 11. What the hell happened there?
Oh, I thought it was Dan. Sorry. Like, one person understood what I... Yep. Forget it. I take it back.
My theory is that the sheriff is too dreamy to interrogate. That's my theory, and I'm sticking with it.
What?
He's so dreamy.
Dreamy? But
they already interrogated him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no, I'm curious about that as well, because there's also been a month that's elapsed. We don't know anything about what happened to the facility or the gate that was inside of the facility. We don't know if it's kept growing, because as we saw, as every time we would go back to the gate during the course of the few days that this series takes place in, that area of the facility kept getting more and more encrusted in this stuff that you would find in the Upside Down. So we don't know if they went through and cleaned that out, or if they buried it, or if it's, you know, they got it under control, quote unquote, or something. Like, it doesn't really get like a cap on that one. So that's probably like the biggest open-ended thing that I'm curious about. As for the sheriff himself, he seems to have cleaned up a bit, although he's not very social. And I don't know if he's putting that stuff there because he knows anything about 11, or if that's just like some ritual in case it will draw 11 back, because maybe he feels bad about ratting her out to Dr. Brenner and everybody, and thus ruining everything. But you know, that's a possibility.
I think the thing that tipped me off for that, though, is that he doesn't just leave food there. He leaves it in like a Tupperware container. And I feel like that probably shouldn't be as big of a detail to me, but I was thinking to myself, like, okay, he's probably going to go back, and I bet that Tupperware is going to be empty. You know, like, if it's closed up and empty, that means someone came along and emptied it, presumably eating it, and then puts it back. I don't know. It's a nice piece of Tupperware. You don't just leave that in the forest.
Especially in the 80s when Tupperware...
This is the 80s we're talking about, too.
We had Tupperware parties, doggone it. Some serious stuff.
I have another question, and maybe this is just logistics and I just, like, totally missed it or something. Like, what are they telling the people in the town that, like, all of a sudden, like, Will isn't dead? They buried a damn body.
You remember that body you saw? Right. You remember that body you saw? It was stuffed. It wasn't real. And everything is a lie. And the Department of Energy or whatever it was is actually a front for a government organization that was trying to spy on war enemies and ended up finding an extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional being. And then everyone in the town is like, ha, good joke, stop drinking so much. And then, it, you know, everyone forgot about it.
It makes me angrier because I know they're not going to address it, and I want it addressed. I need that logic fulfilled, or else it's going to bother me the whole rest of the next season.
Especially in a small town when you know that everybody talks to everybody. It doesn't make sense. You would have, and maybe that actually could become a plot in the second season, if we have one, where there are a bunch of people who start to other, to use it as a verb, the Will and his the Byers family, because it's the Salem witch trials, because they're not, you know, explaining it because they can't for risk of probably their lives. And so what are they left to do? Just try to be normal, which we already know they've struggled to do.
I imagine that the plot of season two, well, at the end of this, at least, the Institute can probably just magic away any logistical problems like they did with every single other lawsuit that the sheriff found in the library, because they seem to be able to just kind of whisk everything away, and no matter what other weird crap they got away with in the past, they should be able to do the same thing here. Like with Eleven's mother, that is confirmed to be Eleven's mother, right? That's at least how I read it.
Yeah, that's my interpretation. Yeah.
That's canon.
So, so they should be able to just kind of magic that away, and maybe for the plot of season two, they aren't able to magic this one away for whatever reason, because the sheriff is so gung-ho about getting the truth, or any other number of things. One of my favorite things about the last part of the last episode was some newspaper clippings on the wall of the police department, where they say things along the lines of dead boy revived, or just comes back and things. And they're celebrating, they're happy, they're weirded out, but at least it's not a secret. They're not trying to say, oh, you all imagined that funeral or anything like that. It's just, oh, this boy's back. Interesting. And I'm curious to see the fallout of that. I'm sure that's going to be something in season two as well. I'm just assuming it's existing because I really, really want it. I feel like at this point they're just kind of, they satisfied the plot of this and the main arc of getting Will back, which makes this whole season feel satisfying. But all these extra little tidbits of details that we're hashing out right now, they're going to leave that for season two, and I think that's brilliant. Anyone have anything else on Stranger Things? Any other tidbits you want to throw out? Anything else you noticed? Anything you liked or disliked about it?
I think there's just going to be an increase in Eggo waffles being purchased. So you should buy some stock in
there. The official Eggo account actually used a gift from the show when she's walking out of the convenience store with all of the Eggos. They actually used that on their official account.
Yes, that was like one of my favorite scenes ever. Awesome. She's just like walking out, and then the guy crashes into
the door. Yes. The power is super cool there. The soundtrack will be coming out soon. There was a post by the people who produced the soundtrack on Facebook not too long ago where they said that soon and very soon we will have the soundtrack. So I'm looking forward to adding that right next to my The Social Network soundtrack and having two things to listen to in the background and enjoy that are beeps and boops and bops. Other than that, I don't know. My name's Micah Sargent and I approve this movie. I dug the 80s vibe of the whole thing, and I think it was really well done. And, if you've made it this far, then you know a lot about the show. So if you haven't watched it and you listen to this whole thing, still totally go watch it. But I really wish you wouldn't have done that. You know, it's really worth your time, I think.
I'll do you one better and say, if you've gotten this far and listened to the show and loved Stranger Things, go back and rewatch it, because I rewatched the whole season in preparation for this, and I really, really enjoyed it on a second run. I can say it holds up. Joe, any closing statements?
I just watched the first episode again before we recorded, and I was spotting all the continuity errors in terms of the staging. So make sure you go back and do that, because...
Joe, do you want a hug?
just keep an eye out. There are some flaws, but I still like it, even though this has flaws, especially in terms of like pacing and some weird things initially. And that I think that the Duffer brothers were better when the series got going, and that a lot of what they started with, they benefited from doing those first couple episodes and seeing what they could play off of to build on as they went through the series. Of course, it was all like shot relatively quickly, but they were able to figure it all out in short order. And that's another thing that makes it interesting, is because it's not, an 8-hour movie, even though it is like one solid chunk of entertainment. Because it's made in these stages, and so you can see the seams of it coming together as you go through. So I like it.
Allison Truge, do you have any closing statements?
My closing statement is that in episode one, I created a rich fiction in my head where I'm like the waitress at a Midwestern diner run by a gruff bearded man who like just wants to be loved and takes in like a small girl. And then I was devastated and betrayed by the show, but even through that, I love it more.
That is so weird to me.
I really liked that diner guy.
It was so weird to me because I knew instantly that he was not going to make it.
Really?
Like he was either going to be left behind or he was going to be killed.
I created an entire life with that man in my brain.
I didn't go that far, but man, I really liked it because I was expecting, I think it's because I was so busy expecting the worst from the guy. Like in the very beginning, I was, oh no, this guy's going to be a turd to 11 and it's going to be bad. And then suddenly he's like the nicest person and just cares so much about 11 and it's fantastic. And so I was just too busy being all hard eyes emoji about that to expect what Cynical Joe was expecting right away.
You were about to say Salty Steve, weren't you?
Yes, exactly. Yes, you called me out. But Cynical Joe in this case, I wasn't expecting that. So whenever that happened, I was like, oh, my heart, my soul.
It really broke my heart. But like, I kind of love that show even more for it. So mm-hmm. What does that tell you about me?
I respect what you did. I am sad, but I respect what you did to me.
Whereas Game of Thrones, they make you sad, but I really do not respect a lot of their decisions in the last season. No, I agree. That one moment where you think the diner owner is going to be a nice caretaker for 11. We don't know much about 11 at this point, but then suddenly, bam, he's gone. And that's the moment where I thought, okay, there's a lot more to this show than what we're going to see. And from there on in, I was hooked. That's when I really was hooked.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that they took that away from you, Truge. It sounds like you had a really good life going.
I did.
So I'm
it's all gone now.
Well, hopefully Barb for president 2016, she'll make it happen for you. I just want to encourage anyone to go watch it. I think it's a pretty awesome show, even if you're not necessarily into, like I said, like kind of the horror and scary ones. I think there is a lot that you'll really enjoy. But just make sure that there's no Christmas lights or any other lights that flicker around, and then I think you'll be safe. Or maybe watch it with flickering lights. Maybe they'll add to the show.
I would also encourage everybody to go out and check out the official GIF generator, where you can make the flashing lights on Winona Ryder's wall say anything you want.
I'm growling at you for mispronouncing that. I think you meant GIF. I'm sorry for even bringing that up. I wanted to say something really quickly that creepy. During Prime Day, they had LED light strips on sale. So I bought, it was like $5 for an LED light strip, and I put it around the back portion of my desk. And I kid you not, I turned them on tonight. and they were flashing for the first, like, that's never happened before. I, like, the wiring is all, well, it's obviously not how it should be because it's messing up, but up to this point, they were fine. And then tonight, as I was launching Skype and getting ready, the LED light strip started flashing, or flickering, rather, not even flashing.
It's Barb talking to you, telling you that she's okay.
Barb, I miss you.
If Will can come back, Barb can come back too.
Yes, and so can our friend. Oh no, he was killed by a human.
The worst.
The worst.
Our friend Dinerman lives on in our hearts.
Dinerman, yes.